All right, this is Owen Hagan, we're back on the record from the March 13th, 2024, regular meeting for the Freedom of Information Commission. I have recused myself from one matter, so I'm going to call the next matter now that the matter that I was grieving myself on is over. So I'm calling docket number FIC 2023-0387, Jennifer Partis versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Social Services et al. Ms. Partis here, please. Could you please just identify yourself for the record?
Jennifer Partis.
Good afternoon, Attorney Wendell Slid from the Department of Social Services.
Thank you, Attorney Slid. All right, so Ms. Partis, would you like to begin, please?
Yes, so I'm here because I had filed a request for information, and then we had one hearing, and then we were supposed to have an extension to that hearing on March 1st. I was looking forward to that extension of a hearing because I didn't feel I had the opportunity in the first hearing to discuss it, you know, all my thoughts. So, well, what happened is I missed the March 1st hearing. So I just want to explain. So the respondent, you know, they share in the hearing officer's report that the respondent shared their frustration and, you know, had said that the two of them had each spent 3 hours preparing. And I apologize. And I definitely understand the effort involved. I have spent not 3 hours, but almost 3 years now of my free time dealing with these issues. I was threatened to be fired. Then after that, I wasn't fired, but my job duties were stripped from me. And it's in CHRO right now. And CHRO has characterized all of this as probable discrimination. So it's gotten very complicated. Some of it's beginning in CHRO, some of it's in the midst of CHRO, some of it's in Superior Court, all over the place. So in that time, in the past, at least the past 2 years, the respondent has asked for changes of dates on every single CHRO proceeding. Every single one, as they have asked for changes in dates with me coming before the commission and for hearings here as well. I'm exhausted. I certainly did not want to miss the March 1st meeting. Certainly did not want to miss that. I am here because I'm trying to obtain information.
Excuse me a second. Why did you miss the March 1st hearing?
Yeah.
Oh, you're getting to that. Okay, sorry.
So I'm here because I want to get information that will help me show accountability. The current CHRO request is focusing on information that I've been trying to get since July 2022. It's a new request, but I've learned that I need to word my requests in such a way or differently to hopefully get to the desired information. So I definitely did not want to miss the March 1st meeting, but again, I'm very tired. Therefore, when the respondent requested a change for the date, because the extension of the hearing was originally scheduled for February 28th, and they asked for the date, the change of date, the commission got back and said, well, they proposed March 1st. And did you all get I said sent this in my handout? Okay. So they proposed March 1st. And so if you turn to the second page of my handout, does anybody, I brought some extra copies if anybody needs any. No. Okay. So February is a short month, with the 29th being the last day. And so I saw the email looking at February. Okay, there was the FOIA hearing that was supposed to happen February 28th at 9:30 a.m. And this is a, mind you, this is a Friday after work that I'm reading this email for a proposed change. It was on the 23rd that I got the, Friday the 23rd that I got the email. I open my calendar book, which I have here. I flip the page. And what I do is you can see the top, the whole top March 1st falls all the way to the right. March 1st was a Friday. And being exhausted and tired, I looked at it and I go, oh, you know, end of February, oh, March begins on, you know, over here on to the left. And so I wrote down, I started looking at the beginning of the work week for March. And I wrote at the very top, FOI hearing with a question mark, you know, because I was waiting for the commission to, you know, somebody to respond to acknowledge, because I said, yes, I sent my email out, that's fine with me. I wrote that down, and then the respondent got back, said March 1st is fine with them. So I crossed it off, and I put FOI hearing down for March 4th. I put it down on March 4th by mistake. And I attribute it to being very tired, simply. So so I wrote it down there, wrote it down the wrong date. Then what happened is, so this all happened on the 23rd, you know, and I wrote this down on the 23rd, then the next week comes. And on the 29th, evidently, this is the only note, and usually I get FOI notifications in the regular mail, but this one came certified, and I live in a condo building, you know, so I don't get, you know, if you're not there, you don't get it, it goes to the post office. So February 29th, at the end, after work, I get in my mailbox, oh, there's, you know, certified mail. I know what that is, you know. Oh, you can pick it up March 1st after 11 a.m. And I'm like, oh, I know what, I bet you that's the FOI commission. And March 1st is Friday. I can pick it up after Friday. I'm thinking, oh, well, that's for the Monday, you know, in my mind, because I had already written on my calendar that it was going to be Monday. So I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. Let me try to get to the post office tomorrow, Friday, March 1st, not thinking it was March 4th. And so this thing I got in the mail even planted in my mind even more so that the hearing was on Monday, you know, because why would I get notice on the day? You know, why would I be able to pick up notice on the day of a hearing? So that happened. So then after work, on March 1st, after work, I sit down at my computer, and because this is the only time I have to work on this stuff is Friday nights, you know, weekends or what have you. So I sit down at 6 p.m. on Friday night, March 1st, and I'm looking through, I get my papers together, and I'm like, March 1st, wait, today is March 1st. And my heart sank, because I'm sitting at the computer trying to prepare more for Monday, realizing I had just missed a hearing that day. And I tried not to fall apart because I'm tired, but I wrote an email immediately, which is on the first page. I sent it and I apologized, realizing my mistake and asking for the hearing that was supposed to be on March 1st to be rescheduled, because I still, I put in a complaint because I believe the information is coming to me very untimely, and I would like, you know, I had wanted to discuss my thoughts on that at the hearing, which was supposed to happen March 1st, or discuss more of my thoughts on that. And so the report came just this past week, you know, from the hearing officer last week, saying that, you know, I blew it, you know, I didn't make that meeting, and therefore my complaint is denied. And so I'm here to ask that it be rescheduled, so I have an opportunity to share my thoughts on why I believe this information is coming to me very untimely. I need the information because I'm defending myself you know, in CHRO, in Superior Court. It's just me. I need the information. I had originally asked for the information July of 2022, but then I had to put in a new request, rephrase it all, June of 2023. And here it is, March of 2024. I've gotten a little bit of information since June. You know, there was a couple months I went back and forth with DSS, which I want to talk about in a hearing, why I disagree with some of the stuff, why they didn't get to it right away. But anyhow, finally by August of 2023, they agreed to some things, and I got a little bit of information in September.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Pardis, yeah. I know you might go on a lot. I think we can just deal with the issue at hand, which is the failure to appear. Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Yes.
I apologize, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Commissioner Streeter, and I understand that, you know, I'm interrupting before Attorney Slid has a chance to respond, and I understand that, you know, he didn't show up with a witness. But in this case, I mean, it looks like that the respondents requested a continuance at the beginning of February, and in my humble opinion as one commissioner, that it seems that the commission sort of is a little bit at fault here. If there was a motion that was made on February 2nd that we didn't, you know, finalize the date until February 23rd, sent out a notice on the 26th, which was received by the post office on the 29th, that it really sort of condensed the amount of time for the complainant to respond, even if, you know, there may have been another, you know, email that was after this that may have notified her, but it's not in the record here. But assuming that there wasn't a response from the administrative assistant to the FOI confirming this, it seems that this was sent out only registered mail. And again, just my own personal bias, because in Massachusetts we send things not only first class mail and return receipt, so that even if something does get to somebody's house, there's an instance where it shows up the day before a hearing, and that the person can, you know, we're relying on the United States Post Office to let her have her envelope at 11 a.m. for a 1 p.m. here. It's just difficult. I mean, I'm just one, but I would recommend that you demand this unless you work through the time constraint. So I would humbly ask, you know, I guess for the hearing officer, if we have time on this, and then involves the commission with a demand that I also agree that we try to give the respondent a chance to respond.
This is Commissioner Hankins. I know this is kind of out of order, but rather than going through a lot, just asking Attorney Harmon, it states that all parties confirmed in writing that they were able to appear for the continued hearing on said date and time. Is there anything in the record that you have that shows a writing?
Yes, I just handed it to you.
May all of us see it?
So
I did.
I'm please. I'm really old. Is this an email? I know that.
Right.
But
from Ms. Faciano to the parties, confirming that everyone was available.
It says, "Are you?" The last thing it says, "Are you both able?" Before the hearing officer makes a decision on whether to grant the postponement, we need to reschedule the matter as soon as possible. Are you both able to make it for March 1st, 2024 at 1 p.m.? Is there anything in writing that says yes, we are able?
Keep reading.
Oh, you go up. Okay. I'm not as fast as technology. Okay, then it's the complainant that says, in this regard to rescheduling of the continued hearing, yes, I'm available on March 1st, 2024 at that time. Thank you.
Yes.
All right. I put that in my backup, too. I acknowledge that.
I have a question for the hearing officer. Commissioner Streeter asked whether this could be continued.
It could be, but this is Attorney Harmon. I was the hearing officer in this case. So here's the thing. When we came to the March 1st hearing, what I'm hearing from the respondents is that they've begun to disclose batches of records. They've disclosed three batches of records to the complainant. The request is complicated. There are multiple parts and players and people. We could have another hearing about what the complainant feels, you know, is missing, or we could allow the respondents to disclose the requested records, to process this request. And then the complainant could make a request for the records that were withheld, and we can have a grown-up hearing about redactions and withholdings, which is really what I think we're supposed to do in a contested case hearing. So they have said to me on the record when they came back, they represented how much time they put in to get ready for this hearing, both counsel and the paralegal. And then counsel represented, Attorney Slitt represented to me that they have started to send out batches of responsive records to the complainant and that they intend to disclose additional batches until this request, which does have lots of parts and lots of time frames and lots of people, has been processed. We can have a hearing about, you know, how much they've done, but I think it makes more sense. This isn't Ms. Partis's first time here. She's made some big requests to the commission before, and they've been processed, and this will be processed, but I think it makes more sense. The commission's docket is running at a record pace. I've been here for almost 18 years, and I've never seen it this busy. Contested case hearings are booming, appeals are booming, and so when I have an attorney and a paralegal who have spent 6 hours getting ready for a hearing and they're representing to me that they're going to process this request, you know, I take that to heart. I think it's better to allow them to process the request. Then we can talk about what they didn't give her, because all we're going to talk about at a hearing is how much more work they have to do in order to get this under control. Like I said, there's six requests, but there's, you know, sometimes there's seven, eight, nine people. There's different, you know, different time frames. We're talking about deleted correspondence as well as current correspondence. There's some work to be done here. So I think that if the respondents, you know, I think in good faith, they've pushed some of this out to her. They've represented to me they're going to continue it. If they withhold anything, then we can talk about that. We can talk about what they withheld or what they redacted and why, which is kind of what I think the hearing is for. But I think to just come in and complain that they haven't gone fast enough, again, I don't know how helpful that would be.
So your suggestion is that we
adopt this report, respondents to process this request. This isn't the first request the complainant has made. It's an additional request. Let them process it. And then if the complainant wants, when they say, okay, we're done processing this, they say to her, she can say, all right, now give me everything that was withheld. And then we can come in, we can have an in-camera review, I can take evidence on exemptions, which is what I think my job is.
How long would it take for her to get a hearing?
Well, she'd make a complaint, and we would docket that complaint in order to schedule a hearing.
Why don't we just
approximately how long will it take for her to get that hearing?
I don't know. I don't docket the. I think 4 weeks, okay. 5 weeks. I mean, I'm guessing, but
thank you, Commissioner Einhorn.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. So, well, why don't we just defer taking any action right now and let them continue to. And then we can set a time when you look at it again, and maybe we can find out if there's anything missing, as you say, that you really need to waste time on or spend time on.
Well, because the jurisdictional clock is ticking, right? So right. We have to do something. We either have to adopt this decision or remand it to me. But I think if the remand to me, and look, I'll do whatever the commission wants me to do, of course. But we're going to talk about, we're going to have a complaint, a hearing about how much more has to be done. So for me, I think it's better to allow them to process this and have the complainant can make a request for what they've withheld rather than have a hearing about, you know, how long this has taken them. I think they are, you know, in good faith pushing this out. And I think that there's more work for them to do. And I think it's premature. Based on what I've heard from them and from my review of where we are.
My question is that if we dismiss the complaint now, there's no impetus for them to continue to give her disclosure. So Well, I don't know the jurisdictional date time limits on this at all. If we just sit on this for a little bit while they continue, maybe it'll satisfy her, and then we can come back and dismiss it.
If there's a choice, I would rather have a remand to me rather than waste time, because it is complicated. It's a complicated multi-person, different faceted, different time frame kind of request. So I would rather not lose time on it, because these requests, like the last one I just had, are very they're very time consuming to hear and adjudicate and write up. So
I want to hear from Attorney Slett. I think he's been very patient. So
I'm sorry.
This is unexpected. So I got a little time off to review my notes. I would certainly agree with the hearing officer, who did a fabulous job channeling my arguments, but seeing them ahead of time. But wanted to say that the respondents are obviously in agreement with the hearing officer's proposed decision and support its full adoption. But I did want to highlight just one sentence for you at the end of the third paragraph of the proposed decision, which is essentially what we've been talking about here, is we have produced, just in terms of the actual numbers that we're talking about, three batches of responsive documents to this FOIA request. We're continuing to turn over batches on a rolling basis. We will continue to do so. I can represent that we will not put this away. We have been, we've frankly been working on Ms. Partis's FOIA requests for probably 2 years now, as they come in intermittently. And respondents exhibit 12, we can see that we produced so far for this FOIA request 6,305 pages, 124 Excel spreadsheets. And when you factor in that this FOIA request overlapped with the one before this one in the same time period, that's another 3,000 pages that we turned over. They were kind of crossing each other. So that brings us over 9,000 documents since the summer. So, and we're actively working on the next production batch for, again, this FOIA request. And we hope to get that out very soon. But that's, there's seven separate bullet points, all separate time frames and separate custodians that we're searching their communications. So we do think that it makes sense to finish the production, and we can go from there. But
if we adopt this decision to dismiss this matter, you can cease work on this file. I think that's Attorney Einhorn's.
And I understand. I mean,
are you going to cease work?
Absolutely not.
Why?
Well, Ms. Partis is very familiar with how to file complaints. This is our third or fourth time here in the last couple of years with Ms. Partis. And she's exercising her rights, and we are very familiar that this this is not something that would go away. And so we are actively working.
So even though there's no request before you, if this is dismissed, you're going to continue to work on this particular request and provide her with whatever information
I can represent that obviously I'm an attorney, I am not the commissioner of social services at this point, but I can represent that I will go back to the agency and make it clear that this is a continuing, I guess it would be a continuing obligation, but
let me just ask the hearing officer.
If you represent as an officer of the court, that's how I will act. But
okay, this is just let me ask the hearing officer. So to that end, Ms. Partis could simply re-request the same records again if this is dismissed. She could do this tomorrow.
She could, of course, she could.
And then counsel's client would have the obligation to respond. So then you could continue to respond. Does that make sense?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, of course.
Is that a logical way to handle this?
Yes, I think it is, because, Then we can talk about, if we want to talk about what she didn't get, the records that they're withholding from her, we can't even do this right now. And I know that that there have been some large overlapping requests. So I just think based on the evidence that is in the file, based on the representation of counsel, I think that it makes sense to do that in this case. But of course, I will do whatever the commission wants me to do.
Good. Commissioner Fusashi.
So this might sound a little different than you usually hear from me. I mean, I have, you know, deep empathy and respect for the challenges Ms. Pardis that you face and dealing with the complications of dealing with the legal system on your own. And I respect what you have done. But I also believe this is a very important decision for the FOIC. We are living through a time when there is very, very significant demands on our staff and on how we operate. And this is one time where I believe we should listen with empathy, but it's the right time to vote yes on the hearing officer's report, which reflects a lot of effort and thought and the process and the work of the Department of Social Services, because we must help the process also move forward for the general public. Ms. Pardis has been served in the immediate. There's also even been a representation made that they will try to do the best to continue without the legal pressure. But if we don't take a stand in moments like this, when so much effort has gone into something, we must make room and time for our staff to move and process all the other issues that hang over. And so I believe I'm weighing two justices, but in my case, at this moment, I would very much like to move that we approve the hearing officer's report and move forward.
This is Commissioner Hankins.
Commissioner Hankins.
I would agree with Commissioner Fusashi. When they talk about the clock ticking, it's not ticking against the respondents, it's ticking against the complainant. Because if that case is done within the year, then it's dismissed. So, you know, it's kind of against the respondent to allow the case to be refiled. So they have to do the same thing again for a year. So it's actually in the best interest of the complainant that it be dismissed. Second thing is the last two cases that were, I call them failure to appear, it's failure to prosecute. The last two cases that we did as a failure to prosecute, when the hearing was held again, the person again failed to show up for a second time. So I think it's really twice burnt, once learned here. I would vote against, I would agree that the case should be dismissed. And I think it's best for both parties. And I think that the last thing I want to say is that I believe that the respondents' counsel and the state, you know, the respondents are moving as quickly as possible. I mean, 9,000 documents over the course of a couple of years have, in fact, been disclosed, not just in this case, but in other cases. Two batches or three batches have been provided, 9,000 documents. That's a lot to review. And there's going to be more that's going to be turned out. So I have no doubt that the state's going to do that. Maybe not at the speed that the complainant wants, because that's the majority of what we heard in her complaint, her oral complaint here, but they're trying as best they can. And they have, you know, this case is not the only FOI request I believe that the state has right now. So I would agree with Commissioner Fusashi, and I'm going to vote for the report.
Is that a second?
Well, not yet. I mean, nobody's yet. As close as I can get.
Thank you, Commissioner Parrish. Could I just understand our options here? We could adopt the hearing officer's report and dismiss. Could someone explain the remand action?
So if the commission wanted to send it back to me, I'm sure, of course, I would reopen, because right now the hearings are closed.
Right.
And I have a report before the commission. I would take the case back and have a reopened contested case hearing.
Another hearing.
And we would, again, have the respondents come in with their witnesses, and we would talk about where they are in the case. which is fine. We can do that. But it seems to me that with the overlapping cases and with the amount of records that I've seen being disclosed here, we can talk about that they're not going fast enough. We certainly can gather and talk about promptness. But I do think that, you know, it's equally as important, if not more important, to talk about what the respondents are refusing to disclose. And we won't get there unless we allow them to process the request. Because really, when we get to the hearing, promptness certainly can be talked about. We can always talk about promptness. But exemptions to disclosures, redactions of public records, the legal reasons why those things are being done, that's kind of why I think we gather in a contested case forum to talk about why public records are not being disclosed. And that really can't happen yet in this case because they're still rolling out the records. And I do want to say that the exhibit that Attorney Slitt referenced is evidence in this case. So I do have that evidence that they have disclosed that quantity of records. But those are our options. I can take the case back, or we can vote this up. She can certainly make a new request. She can file a new complaint. We can talk about this again. But what I don't like to do is let the jurisdictional clock of the commission tick, because these cases to write up are complicated. So I would say that we either adopt this or you send it back to me to have a hearing.
Thank you.
Yes.
Commissioner Boldly, so I'm a fan of efficiency and transparency. Obviously, that's the big part of the FOIA Act. And I believe everyone here, including the respondent, has been very transparent about what it is that they're going to do moving forward. I certainly empathize with you because I'm looking at this. I could have easily made that same mistake. You know, you're busy, you're tired. There's a lot that's going on. So I don't think anyone here is faulting you, especially with the timeline of how it was sent and the complicated aspect of it. So I just wanted to make that clear. I don't think anybody is looking at you as you wasted resources or time intentionally. I don't believe anybody is saying that at all. So I wanted to put that on the record. But I also believe in the interest of time and in the interest of what the purpose of, when you file your complaint with the Freedom of Information Commission, you're saying that they violated the Freedom of Information Act. But it's hard to say they violated if you didn't get the full request as of yet. I'm not saying, you know, we get requests, you know, complaints for timeliness, for there's a lot of reasons behind it. But I think what the hearing officer, Attorney Harmon, was saying is the real issue here is whether or not you have the information that you need. And so by dismissing the complaint today, it will actually utilize and move your case faster, because otherwise it's going to be this pending time frame and circling it back. She put a hearing on probably in a month, maybe two, and they're probably not going to finish the request in that time. And so then that starts to feel like it's not efficient. And so I know the dismissing of the complaint today may feel like it's a loss, but based on the circumstances, that's just my perspective. And I think that's where everyone is coming from, or at least I can speak for myself as to why I would vote in favor.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, yes. We could also amend the order to say, this is Attorney Harmon, the complaint is hereby dismissed without prejudice. I mean, if it makes it clearer for the complainant, certainly we could. I would propose that amendment. Really, there is no prejudice.
I don't think we need.
Okay, yeah. All right, okay.
I think if we added with prejudice, that's what you're saying.
Okay. All right.
Yes, just Mr. Chairman.
So, again, I probably spoke too soon, because typically when we get these cases for failure to appear, we deal with about a case-by-case basis, and we don't get a lot of the background information. So when I spoke previously, seemed to me what we would usually sort of weigh as far as a valid argument. I did have an issue, you know, with how the process, you know, if we're going to start taking emails into account, then why are we even mailing stuff? I mean, that, if we're saying things that are registered mail, and we're going to then come to a meeting and use to weigh evidence that, oh, everybody agreed on this day, well, I have an issue with that process too. And again, that's a freedom of information process. Not only was there the delay to get this scheduled, but if you have an email and you're saying, oh, can we meet tomorrow? Okay, we'll email tomorrow. Well, why would you even send something if all the parties agree to meet tomorrow? You have an email record then. But that being said, having heard, you know, the background and that this, you know, case is moving forward, I did take it, under advisement when I read it, that, the respondent was willing to, but I also have the issue that once the case is dismissed, it's dismissed. Adding the additional context that, there are other cases that this is something that can go back. I'm sort of reversing my previous statement that I would, like to have this remanded and agree with the statements by my fellow commissioners about dismissing this with the understanding that if you continue with the process and refile, it would be most beneficial for you at a hearing to, take up the items that you have an issue with as far as non-produced, redacted, or whatever, the withheld records. So I just want to go back in the record that I would support, the hearing officer's report now.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am, you've been waiting patiently. Go ahead.
Thank you. A few thoughts. One, I was up front in my backup that I did agree to March 1st. I know that. I sent the email. I put that in the backup. That's why I copied my calendar, because I was like, I knew exactly what my mistake was, I'm tired, as I said, exhausted. But a few, I'm definitely afraid of taking, dismissing the complaint. I'm asking for information from the respondent, and the respondent is also defending, the agency against my discrimination suits. So there is reason. The respondent is saying they're working as hard as they can, to give information. But the respondent also has, is defending the agency. And that information will be very useful to me in my discrimination suits. So I'm afraid to have it dismissed because I'm afraid, to take any pressure off.
Let me interrupt you, please. I had asked the hearing officer a question, and I was really trying to give you information. You can re-request the same information and say to the respondent, please give me the information that I asked for some time ago, but I accept for the fact that you've given me some of that information. Give me everything else that is outstanding. And counsel has represented here on the record that he is going to continue to provide you with that. So I don't think there's a problem that you're going to have with that. As far as discovery goes in your lawsuit, you can also ask for discovery in your lawsuit in whatever arena you're in, and you can slow the proceedings down and say, I haven't received that discovery. So I understand you're attacking it from two different angles.
Mr. Commissioner Hankins. From what I understand of the CHRO, my experience in that representing municipalities, when the CHRO inquires of the respondents, it's a thorough inquiry, and they have to provide the same documents they respond to the CHRO as to you. So it actually may be more complete than what you're asking for under the FOI. Okay, I don't know where you are with all of that, but you're getting it from that source also. Okay, just as an aside.
I also wanted to just kind of clarify, it the way the respondent and the officer is, speaking about my requests, multiple requests, voluminous pages produced. I put in a request for information in July 2022. My second request, and a lot of information from that request was determined non-responsive or irrelevant. My second request was simply to see the information that was put aside. So it was like part of the same request. I just wanted to see what was put aside and deemed, irrelevant. And then as I'm looking through this irrelevant information, I'm realizing there's a lot of information that was responsive. And I realized that my requests, I'm not wording my requests right. So I put in another request in June of 23 that is the same request, looking for the same, if not, you know, not a different request, but just narrowing it, trying to reword it, trying to focus on a certain few, not a big time period, but actually shortening the time periods and shortening the amount of people. Trying to be more specific, still trying to get at the same information. So I just wanted to make that clear that it's not like I'm asking for this and that. No, I'm asking for the same thing. I'm just going through the process and learning that, oh my God, I've got to reword this because they're withholding things that I want, you know. So, and then as far as the volume is concerned, I've only asked for, you know, some records, but right now it's just emails. And when I, in some of the, you know, say, oh, time frames of people, well, there were 6 bullets, I think, in the finalized request. One bullet was correspondence from one person for 3 days. And I had to put in a complaint. That's when I put in my complaint. I couldn't get that. I filed in June, asked for information in June. By August, I still hadn't gotten correspondence from one person for 3 days, and I filed a complaint. I got that to 3 months for me to get that 3 days correspondence from one person. So some of this is not very complicated. It's very simple, which leads me to, you know, why is it taking so long for me to get this? It's going to be helpful to me. And then as far as the volume, well, the respondent is giving me with an email. Say you have an email that goes back and forth, like 10 times. The respondent is giving me the first email. Then they're giving me the first email again, and then the second person. And they're duplicating hundreds of pages. I think there was one email chain that took 300 pages, 400 pages, because I kept on getting the same email chain. So when you say, oh, 9,000 documents, well, you know what? I have to go through all that and go, well, that's 100, here's 100 pages of the same page. So the appearance is, oh, so many documents. Oh, well, that's a lot of work. Well, you just copy the email chain over and over and over and over to include every iteration of it, which is taking hundreds of pages. And when you get Excel spreadsheets, you know, because I do financial work, so you see you get an Excel thing that's 50 pages, and then you get it again and again and again in every iteration of that email chain. You know, I just want to clarify, it's being presented has a lot more information that's being given to me than is really what is being given to me. So I just want, in my defense, I wanted to say that that is what is happening. And because the respondent is defending the agency against, I was brought into a secret meeting for him to be fired.
So, all right, that's outside of the scope of our matter, which is whether.
I'm scared to have it dismissed. I don't know. I'm scared to have it dismissed.
If it is dismissed, what I'm suggesting is that you refile immediately. And counsel has represented on the record that you're going to continue to get this rolling disclosure of documents, absent the ones they've already given you. I don't think you want them to give you the same documents they've already given you, correct? Okay.
All right. Mr. Chairman, I'll second Commissioner Fazeci's
motion. I did intend to make a motion.
Did you make it?
I will repeat it, but thank you.
Did you make a motion?
I intended to, but maybe it was not clear.
My
intent was to make a motion.
It sounded like you made a motion.
Me too. I would like to move that
we adopt the hearing officer's report.
Mr. Chairman, I'll second it.
Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Farish?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Goolsbee?
Yes.
Mr. Gansman?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you.
And thank you for coming and keep going.
Thank you both.
Don't give up. Inspiring. I know it's hard. Really. I do. Keep going. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Attorney Hyman.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis.
Thank you.
Take care.
I know you're getting tired of me.
Enough of that. This is a really long hearing officer's report.
Yeah.
40 pages or 50 pages.
Yeah, it's a big case.
Is this the case that was argued in front of the university?
Yes.
But those are good, probably still somewhere a CT net, and it's a great thing to take the FOIC out to the university.
Yes.
Eastern Connecticut.
Eastern Connecticut State University, right. Yes.
So, okay.
Okay.
Before we move on to that, just if anyone wants to discuss, if you have the heart for it or the interest in it, the notices that went out in that case, I'm happy to go over that with you a little further because there were additional notices that.
Oh, you sent like two or three of them.
Gone out, yes. So I'm happy to go over that. What's that?
Not now.
I'm just saying individually, if anybody wants to, decided not to prolong your discussion
Thank you.
Any further.
Thank you.
So the Supreme Court's decision in the Drum case. So the Supreme Court affirmed the trial court's reasonable possibility test, wherein with a prospective law enforcement action under Section 1-210B3D, there has to be at least a reasonable possibility that there's going to be this law enforcement action and that disclosure of the records could prejudice the ongoing action, which means under the standard, it has to be more than theoretical possibility, but it doesn't have to be an absolute certainty that there's going to be this prospective law enforcement action. So in upholding the trial court's test, the Supreme Court reasoned that they said with a thumb on the scale in favor of disclosure, it would be inconsistent with the purpose of the Freedom of Information Act to conclude that the law enforcement exception applies upon a showing that a law enforcement action is only remotely or theoretically possible. The Supreme Court expressly rejected the standard advanced by the Division of Criminal Justice, which was open investigation, a suspect identified, and no insurmountable obstacle to a future prosecution. In rejecting that standard, they were the amicus in the case, in rejecting the standard that the Division of Criminal Justice proposed, the Supreme Court said such a standard would preclude the public from exercising any effective oversight, not only in murder cases, but in all cases in which any applicable statute of limitations has not run. They said that the legislative history of the FOIA makes clear that the legislature has recognized a particular need for robust oversight of local law enforcement agencies. So the articulated test by the trial court, which was Judge Clow, the reasonable possibility test, is a multi-factor test, which includes consideration of basically five different areas. I think it's five. No, it's more than five. So the length of time that has elapsed since the crime was committed, the length of time that has elapsed since law enforcement last obtained significant new evidence or leads, whether the agency has classified the investigation as a cold case, the number of investigators currently assigned to the investigation, the amount of time that they currently commit to the investigation, whether the agency has a suspect, and if so, whether the agency's suspicion is supported by more than mere speculation. And finally, whether advances in science or technology, such as DNA analysis, may lead to new evidence or permit fruitful reevaluation of existing evidence. In applying the factors, applying those seven factors, the court said that we shouldn't lose sight of two important questions. Number one, is law enforcement honestly investigating the case? And number two, once a case has gone cold, does there remain a reasonable possibility that the investigation will ultimately lead to some sort of law enforcement action? And the court said, with regard to the commission considering these cases, they said that the commission is free to conclude, consistent with its prior practice, that the longer an investigation has been cold, the greater the burden on the respondents to affirmatively demonstrate that a prospective law enforcement action remains a reasonable possibility. So in front of the Supreme Court, we argued that the hearing officer, which was Commissioner Streeter, it wasn't a new test that the court created at the trial level, because the commissioner actually looked at all of those factors during the course of the hearing. Even though they hadn't been assembled as this reasonable possibility test, he already had done that. But the court said that they felt that the trial court standard was new, like a new collection and articulation of this test. And so they remanded the case to the commission so that this new standard could be applied. But I think the reason that the trial court found in favor of the commission's decision was because the hearing officer had already looked at those seven factors and had some testimony about all of them.
We have to do it again.
But the Supreme Court did remand it with some little indications that perhaps we should take the records in camera. It's like the last second to the last sentence in the decision. So overall, it was really a pro-disclosure case. I mean, I think it was wonderful that it was a unanimous decision and we didn't have this fractured kind of response to the commission. But I like that the court really talked about the burden and how, like, the older the case, the more difficult the burden should be, and the commission's prior precedent in that regard was sound. So it was a very good decision for us, and I'm really pleased about it. And so I guess we will we'll take it back, and we'll have to give it back to commission.
I'd be happy to, but I think that I'd rather have a professional lawyer.
Another attorney with you doing it. And I think in terms of the posture now, I believe that the police department, after our initial decision, disclosed a lot of records. And this was actually a little point of contention.
Right.
They left the impression that they'd just, you know, complied with the order, but it was discovered later on when the counsel for the complainants was looking at it that they hadn't been given everything.
Yeah.
So I think that point of that is just the universe is much more narrow in terms of what we have to review in camera from the first go around.
Mr. Chairman, I had a question.
Yes.
So then what happens now? Do you have to have another hearing?
Yes, there'll probably be a new complaint filed, maybe even a new, I don't know how we'll get it back. It's back to us now,
yes,
so we'll have a new hearing. Yeah, we'll have a new hearing. They remanded it, so we'll just open it up and everybody will come back in. But there was a good disclosure after the commission's decision, which was represented to be like all the records, but the requester in this case really knew the file and he knew that that was not all the records. So yeah, it's on remand, so we'll just schedule another hearing.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And I think the good news for our commission going forward is we now have this really nice test, and we thank Judge Clough for that, the reasonable possibility standard, and with a lot of factors we can look at. So I think that'll be very helpful to us on the rare occasion we get these cases.
Right.
I would say another piece of good news, and I'm just a Fairfield County former lawyer, a country lawyer, but that we had the full new Supreme Court take it and learn to some degree the new justices about the Freedom of Information Act through this case.
Yeah, it was
the case was held up for the two new Supreme Court justices, and then they also took part. And so I think it's a great way for them to come into this process on a case.
Yeah, it was very strong.
That's brought on many issues.
Very strong decision, I think, for the commission and the commission's discretion and what you need to prove when you're here. It's a real standard. They have to prove it. So thank you.
Great. Thank you.
So thank you very much.
Take a breath now.
Yeah.
Come up and talk about another
victory for us. Yes.
A win and no remand, so a win-win. So Danielle McGee, I served as counsel of the commission along with Jennifer Miller in the town of Arizona versus Sastry appeal. Attorney Harmon was the hearing officer, so certainly kudos to her. So this case surrounds an interesting fact pattern. It's the record at issue was a 11-page log that was created by a town employee. The log documented concerns that the employee had over well over a year with incidents or experiences this person had with the then police chief for the town of Avon. And ultimately, the employee went to the town manager with their concerns. Town manager goes to town attorney and says, employee presented me with these concerns. Town attorney says, why don't you go back and ask the employee if there are any notes? And lo and behold, there's this log. So the issues that were presented to the commission and that were at issue on appeal were whether the log was a public record, and if it was a public record, whether it was exempt from disclosure pursuant to the attorney-client privilege. And the court agreed with the commission that it is a public record and that it is not exempt pursuant to the attorney-client privilege. Specifically, you can't route records to your lawyer and try to cloak them in privilege. I think what's really good about this decision is the court really breaks down what the definition of a public record is, specifically the prong of the definition that goes to whether its contents relate to the conduct of the public's business. So the court looks at some prior Supreme Court decisions analyzing, or not analyzing, but really saying that the conduct of public employees, particularly their on-duty conduct, and particularly the conduct of members of law enforcement, is essentially a matter of legitimate public concern and is the public's business. And also in this particular case, the town conceded through the testimony of the town manager that they indeed used the information in this log to make a decision about the police chief to place him on administrative leave, and then ultimately they entered a severance agreement. So again, as I said, I think a really good language about what it is to be a public record. There's also a really good footnote, I think it's footnote 5, about in this case, the public agency tried to weave this sort of concern or worry about information in the log relating to the individual drafter, that it was personal in nature, that this person didn't want this information disclosed. And the court said, whether this document's a public record, whether there's some information in it that's personal in nature, is not dispositive of whether it's a public record. You really need to look at whether it relates to the public's business. So I thought that was really good. And then getting to the issue of whether it's a client privileged document, the court, I think, did a really good job of analyzing the attorney-client privilege under Hsu and also under Kasuda Bregazi, so two Supreme Court decisions. So looking at whether it's an attorney-client privilege communication, and the court said, you know, Tom Avon failed because there was no communication between the individual employee and the attorney, and the document wasn't a memorialization of any legal advice. And you also lose under Kasuda Bregazi because this document was a pre-existing document. There's no evidence it was transformed in any way. There's no evidence that it was created to be given to counsel. So you lose. You have to give it out. You can't take a pre-existing document and just funnel it to your lawyer and say, which I think we all pretty much know, but I guess had to be really hammered in this case. So I think it was a really good decision, really good language, and the court really credited a lot of the findings that Attorney Harmon made, which I think was really good, and did a nice job of laying out the legal analysis under both Supreme Court decisions. So all in all, win. Good case. Interesting facts.
Yeah.
And I'll just add, Attorney Miller's not with us any longer, but she worked on the case with me, and she argued it before the appellate court, so kudos to her as well. Thank you.
What's the time frame for
I think it's not this Monday, I think it's the following Monday. So I haven't heard or seen anything, but I guess we'll know maybe by the next meeting.
Two good.
Great job.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Do you want to report anything else? Like pending appeals?
I don't think so.
Okay.
We've all peeled out today.
That's it.
6 months, could
Okay. Under executive director's report, I'll just announce that four of you went before the executive and legislative nominations committee, March 5th, I believe, and everyone got voted through that committee. So each one will be put up before one chamber of the legislature. I heard great things about testimony and a lot of support from some legislators for our work. So thank you all for going through that and doing such a nice job. And we'll let you know when your approval is official.
I was talking to Commissioner Parrish. She didn't realize that some of the four other members do not have to go through.
Yeah, I didn't know
myself.
That.
Right.
John.
Right. Chris. Legislative appointments. we do not have to go through that process.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Slide by.
So I find figured that you were
2-year terms versus 4-year terms.
Oh, I see.
So.
The power of the legislature.
That's right. That's right. So, okay. And then under staff reports, I meant to send out a little email to everybody, but I'll announce it now that we did hire an administrative assistant. She's going to start February 5th, so that will...
February 5th?
April 5th. Oh, my goodness, that's how long she started. April 5th, yes. And so that'll conclude filling all our support role positions, and we still have 2 attorneys that we will be, I believe, posting for those in the very near future. So I think we're all pretty excited for that. That's it. Now we're up to legislative report. Is it all a return? we've been extremely busy in a short session, hearing testimony and actually testifying.
Yeah, so past several weeks, Russell's testified. I testified 2 different hearings last week. Colleen testified today. I think the main thing to report is that there's just a lot of bills right now that I think the pro-transparency one is the one that the commission submitted, but there's so many others. We had a meeting with the legislator the other day, and we had a list that we brought.
This is our list.
There's
one good bill, and the rest are.
So there's and there's a few more that just were raised today that need to add to the list, and so. I can go into each of the bills individually, but it is very concerning that there's so many anti-transparency bills, and then there's several that are overly broad. Today, Colleen testified earlier on the university bill that, you know, we argue it's overly broad. It would essentially exempt records of public universities from disclosure. Your arguments against that, so that's one of the bills.
Is the press aware of this?
Yes.
Have they taken up the cause to say?
No, I think I don't know how much they've written, but they have written. They're vocal.
Based on the questions that we had, questions that we had at the nomination hearing, they. You know, they're irritated by the FOI having to disclose information because it's a burden for them, but they're all in support of it. That's what they're saying, but it's irritating, especially when it's focused on them. Yeah. And I understand that. I get it. But,
So we have that.
It's hard to go back and forth.
There's a number dealing with adding employees, like a new category of employees to the 1-217, the list of different categories. There's the employees of the Attorney General's office.
Just one to add all public employees exempting home addresses for all municipal and state public employees.
There's also they concerned with safety of election workers coming, so they want to add them. That one. It's not our position, really isn't that we're not, we acknowledge the safety concerns, but just the way it's built into the act, I don't think.
Who initiated that?
The safety and security for the election workers. It came out of the GAE committee, but I don't know who the legislator is that.
It's part of a big voting. A big voting bill. It's one section.
Yeah. So that one, I think it's just, I think it just gives a false sense of security. I think of public employees, I think that by putting their names, like adding it to the category of individuals, that their address is not going to be out there at all. But voter records are still available. Grand lists are still available. So there's about 3 bills dealing with that issue.
Speaking of voter records, there's that bill that limiting access to the voter list. So there's a bill that would restrict access to, only for journalistic, scholarly, a few other purposes, but the Secretary of State would make a determination. So you have a political person making a determination over who can get access to voter records.
So that hearing on that is coming up next week. It is a proposal that's appeared in the past and
Who's promoting that? Secretary of State?
Well, we're going to look into that.
Yeah, we'll look into that one.
And also, there may be members of the GAE committee.
Yeah.
Chairs who are supportive of that.
You know, honestly, in terms of where bills are coming from, really, it's not being very transparent where they're coming from.
Committee bills, yeah, these are a lot of committee bills.
Yeah, and this year, the bills were raised by committee. They weren't individual legislators, so they had to come out. Some of them I reported to the last time, the hybrid meeting one.
Body camera.
The body cam one. So that, I've reported on it. It hadn't come out, but it's been raised at a quick, I haven't gotten a chance to digest it. But at quick glance, I think it's the same language that we had last year. Kevin was looking, going to go look into it a little bit better. Again, it just came out, which if it's the case that it is similar to last year, you know, there are portions of the bill that we were okay with, like in terms of the reasonable fees for being able to charge for redacting body cam footage. But then there's also these proposed TUMIC exemptions, which we have concerns about. Let's see. I'm trying to think of other ones. I believe you reported on the sign witness statements.
Yeah, we did that. And we have a meeting this week with Despy to go over that. So.
The exemption for the HIPAA. We talked about that before.
So we had the Demas Supreme Court case involving Whiting, mm-hmm. and so the court found in our favor in that case. And one of the issues that was taken up in that case was whether or not HIPAA can serve or as an exemption to disclosure. And the court found that HIPAA cannot. And so now there's a proposal, and interestingly enough, it's before the Appropriations Committee, which it was tucked into a big budget bill. So I'm not quite sure how it ended up in there. And so I think they're trying to create HIPAA-type exemption for these records, but it doesn't really work. And that's being taken up by Appropriations on Friday. So we're working on a statement for that. It was like Section 24 of a larger...
Yeah. The only good thing I can say to you is this is the short session, and most of these bills will not see the light of day. They're all being pushed out there. Every committee is crazy right about now, and by the time, so, I mean, stay on top of it and kind of push it down, but I will tell you that most of these things won't see the light of day, so that you can probably...
I hope you're right.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say several of these proposals were introduced last year and they didn't make it out of committee. Some of them passed the Senate and then just weren't taken up by the House. So I hope even if that's the case, they don't get taken up by the House again. But I think the Senate bills will
make it out of committee, but yeah. With that short session, yeah, it's going to be so tight at the end. So, I mean, you have to stay on top of it.
Yeah. But. I was just because, as you know, I'm quite interested in these issues, but I would just say, and because you speak on behalf of the commission, and I'm on the commission, I would just say two things. I would keep my eye very strongly on the university issue, which we ended up okay last year, more or less. But I would also, my viewpoint at least, is that anything, election workers are essentially mostly volunteers. And at this time in history, at this point, any protection within reasonable ranges that makes election workers feel more secure is not a bad thing in the big picture. And so I, at least, would not put too much or even any attention on highlighting that or making bigger principles out of that, because I at least personally see important value in making election workers feel more secure, at least feel more secure. And politically, I would think it would not help our other causes if we made that an important issue. A diversity issue is a big hole if it were to open, and that I would put on the top of it, in my prioritization personally. And last time you guys did a great job, and it didn't open. The big hole didn't open up, a little hole.
I just take the opposite. I don't want more of these, you know, people to keep coming every year to add themselves to this exemption, especially somebody that volunteers for 4 hours, 3 hours, or 12 hours on election day once a year to suddenly have all their addresses withheld. So I think that, you know, it's really a stretch. I mean, at some point then they're going to just say everybody, because you're all the largest employers in the state or the universities or volunteers or municipal. I mean, at some point there's going to be nobody left. So it's there's no, if you start expanding it, then nobody's really protected.
I think, you know, part of the concern is like you don't want the employees, anyone who's added to that list, to feel that they're covered just by that. You know, it's, as I said, there's still public records that have to be disclosed regardless of whether your name is on that list. And it would actually require these election workers, they would have to, under the way the bill's written right now, they'd have to go to every single agency that could potentially have their address and ask for it to be taken off. So it's, in some ways, it's kind of unwieldy. So
that's a good point. Maybe that won't be.
Our other point is just that on the receiving end, the person receiving that has to then scour all the records they have and figure out, you know, which records might have these people's addresses in them. So, but we did take a softer approach with respect to that exemption. And since the topic has come up, and I testified earlier today and had what I would say would be a difficult go of it, really on this address issue. And I would have much preferred to have talked about the university bill, which I was prepared to discuss, but it devolved more into a discussion about all of these address bills. And just for your information, we, on your behalf, but we have typically taken the position, like, stop adding, don't keep adding these categories of exemption. It's unfair. It doesn't provide any real protection to you. It creates a giant provision on our act that doesn't have a lot of meaning. So we've always kind of taken that position. Last year, we talked with a group about, you know, if you're going to keep chipping away like this, let's just make it all employees, because at least that's fair. So last year, we had been involved in that approach after a public hearing. There was no public hearing on this, but we worked to that end, came up in the legislature, and they wound up spending a lot of time talking about that. And it ultimately did not go through. So this year now we've got singular address exemptions. Then we've got that potential proposal again to exempt all of them. And I was, I would say, chastised is a nice word for the approach that we took. That last year we tried to work toward that end, but this year we're kind of reverting to our, you know, position, like, it doesn't make sense to keep doing this. And since last year it really was a distraction, instead of it being something that was positive and let's put this issue to bed, it became an even bigger distraction last year. So this year I think our approach is to just kind of stay out of that type of compromise and just resume our usual, but I was essentially told that people wouldn't be very trusting. You know, how could anybody trust me and my word anymore? Because last year we had kind of worked on this compromise. So just wanted you to be aware of that, because it was quite public and went on for a while, and there was no substantive discussion of the university bill.
Which committee was this before?
This is at GAE. So just wanted you, you know, to be aware of that. GAE is the Government Administration and Elections Committee. So that committee has, you know, primary oversight over open government
issues. And most of these bills that we Awesome. Tell you
any of the younger legislators, like Senator Blumenthal, Representative Blumenthal, take a position?
He was there. he did not take a strong an approach. His inquiry was about the election workers to see if there was a way to make it less. The word that I had used was unwieldy. So we had a little bit of a dialogue about that.
I think he's an influential member of that committee.
He's the chair.
And otherwise.
Yes. So anyhow, just wanted to make you aware of that and to be continued.
Yes,
right?
To be continued.
So. Okay. Right.
Thank you.
Just more of a general question because I'm not sure if I know. Number one, is there like a tracking bill or list or something that you sent? You may have sent something.
We do a tracking report. Nick's actually been cleaning the list for us, so I can have him when he generates one. We usually generate one per week or two. I can.
Yeah, I'd like to keep.
Yeah, we can send it. It's we have more information in our database, but the report that goes out does say with the bill number, where you know who introduced it, whether it received a public hearing, and what we think maybe the FOI issue. So we can
go on the CJA website
and you
put that bill number in.
It's more so ease for me. Like, I'm not going to remember what the bill number is.
No,
I just wanted to go on my email.
You
can send, we usually do it once a week, but in terms of this list that I created, it was for one of the meetings we have with the legislator. We can update it and I can send it to the commissioners. What we have today.
And then my other question, and Carly may know, are we allowed to testify on behalf of the commission since we're commissioners? Do we need your permission? Or
no,
is there
you could, if there's a bill that you were interested in, I'm happy to let to yield to any one of you to testify.
I get the sense that you're being a little bit attacked. I don't mind taking two heads.
We appreciate any support. So yes, anytime. Or if there's something that we think would be really helpful to have commissioners with us, maybe.
About a month ago.
Okay. So yes, definitely.
Thank you. More than comfortable. Everybody else.
Any new business? Updated with the new one.
No.
I had a business.
Anybody else from staff?
I won the bet. He won?
Because it went so long. Commissioner Hanks, that's right. You know how many candies he kept passing me?
I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yep.
Mr. Farish?
I'm sorry, yes.
Mr. Possession?
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby?
Yes.
Yeah, I want to go along
with Mr. Goldsby?
Yes.
Mr. Gansman?
Yes.
Mr. Hankin?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, all meeting, yes.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Thank you very much.
I'll be there for a minute.
Thank you. I didn't see that.